Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
And a very warm welcome back to Solidarity Breakfast.
A left response to the major developments in capitalism.
What they trade in is not wheat. They trade in famine.
A little dose of revolutionary optimism.
I think it's really important to sort of express solidarity globally.
It really is a deal by corporations for corporations.
The union forever defending our rights. Down with the black leg.
If you think the ABC's left wing, don't listen to this program.
Solidarity Breakfast, 7:30 to 9 a.m. Saturdays, 3CR, 8:55 a.m. Streaming and 3CR digital, podcast or audio on demand. And of course, the website, solidaritybreakfast.org.au.
Solidarity forever!
Good morning, everybody. This is Annie, and I'm in the studio with Tobia on this coolish winter day in Melbourne. If you're listening by podcast later on, that's all irrelevant. But for all the people who are snuggled up in their doonas and or even walking the streets doing whatever they do, getting their Wheaties ready. This is Solidarity Breakfast with your politics with your Wheaties, basically, as Bill Dallow would say. And because it's the 50th anniversary of 3CR and we're coming up to Radiothon, it's nice to remember our compatriots who have passed. And Bill Dallow was a very big leading light when he came to 3CR and was running Solidarity Breakfast. I came on his short tails and I must say, I say to people, you know, the only reason why I'm here is because all the great ones died on me. But it's true, they're all the great ones. Anyway, and I'm sure there were wonderful great ones who were doing Solidarity Breakfast before. I was thinking about, there's many, and hopefully you'll be throwing your pennies towards 3CR and Solidarity Breakfast over the month of June. And of course, our actual program is going to, for Radiothon, is going to be on the 13th. That's next week.
Yeah, and I mean, I'd just like to say, Annie, you're a great one for me.
Well, so. I must be ready to die, mate.
No. No, definitely not yet. But yeah, it's been a big...
You know, it's funny you should say that because my little grandson, Arthur, he's in Glasgow and their poor cat died last week, or they had to put the little cat down, and this cat had travelled the world with this family and they were very upset. And my daughter was saying that 3 to 4 year old wisdom, they were all, he had two compatriots and him were talking about it. Oh, you know, Zelda died. And then one of them, the wise one, said, you know, everything dies.
Very astute. Already.
Yeah, already at four. Yeah, they know what's going on.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah.
What do you say to that?
Anyway. Well, I think it's good because I think actually kids have this incredible ability to cut through the bullshit. They're not yet really formed in an ideological way.
That's exactly right.
And so they just kind of call it as it is. And I think there's a big vacuum for that in reporting at the moment.
Well, that's right. We were talking about what does a journalist do when it's raining outside?
Yeah.
They go outside and say, oh, look, it's raining. They don't say, oh, some people say it might rain and other people say that it will rain.
Exactly right. And it's this push for neutrality in reporting that's kind of killed everything that we've seen. So why at this point should reporters be so measured and, you know, diplomatic and all this sort of stuff when you're in an active war zone and you can't call the truth the truth?
Well, have you got some information about what the Israeli Americans are doing all over the place? I mean, I know that for a fact that in London, in England, and in the US, in New York, and in Australia, that Zionists are doing sales, land sales for the West Bank, as they're expecting their army to mop up all the people who actually own the lands there and get them out so that they can now sell the land to people with money from their backers in European and Australia.
Well, and that's like, there's an aspect to this that that covers this neutrality discussion, right? So the discussion in Australian politics and media is, Ben Gavir is a monster or whatever, you know what I mean? He's
a rampaging, he's this
exceptional character or something like that. And I was watching David Shoebridge press some people and actually say... well, perhaps you...
And David Shoebridge, of course, is the Green Senator.
Is the Green Senator, right? And watching him press Penny Wong and DFAT about what their response was to Australians being detained...
From the Freedom Flotilla.
From the Freedom Flotilla. And
where they were beaten up and sexually assaulted.
Yeah, all of this really broadly reported in non-Australian media, and Australian media is a bit reticent, and even the Australian government with DFAT being really reticent because they're not supporting Australian citizens. The consular services were provided, but that no Australians needed anything beyond basic first aid. That was essentially the statement they were making. And you're talking, like you said, beaten, sexually assaulted and all these things. So obviously way beyond first aid. And all that Penny Wong and her departmentals were able to do was, you know, have these really calm, measured, you know, well-spoken, very neutral declarations that mean nothing in ultimately, in the end.
No, actually, what they said was there was a representative there, but there was a barrier up. We could hear it, but we couldn't see it.
Well, they didn't even say we could hear it. They just said, "Oh, well, there was a partition. The consular service was unable to see," and so it was. I think particularly insulting
it's like the three blind the monkeys
in the public gallery for the Senate hearing. There was Juliet Lamont and the three other participants that were part of the flotilla. And so they were hearing one of the top government representatives wallow in this kind of bureaucratic rubbish. And I mean, it just shows like what a massive crisis in the political landscape there is in Australia when you can't even call a spade and you have a royal commission that is... essentially a Zionist royal commission now that it's been completely co-opted by Zionist ideals. And this all happens in the space where you have Netanyahu saying we control 60% of Gaza and we're pushing for 70% of Gaza. And you have Smotrich saying there is no two-state solution. We're going to take all the land. It's unacceptable. So it is not a... it is not a Ben Gavir is this. It is and people saying he's not a representation of, you know, Israel as a whole. But you have an entire political landscape here. And just after Ben Gavir released his video, the Minister for Transport, I forget her name, but she released a video, the Israeli Minister for Transport, going around to all the detention boats, all those prison boats, and saying, this is how you'll be treated. And this is, you know, giving a kind of tour. So it is not isolated to this one member, and it is not a problem.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because there's a continued response by the legacy media in Australia to have headlines that give the impression that it's a contained war, and that so, for example, they'll be talking about Israeli incursions in Lebanon, but they'll be acting as if it's a righteous war, when in actual fact Israel is actually illegally attacking another country so that it can steal its land. That's it. That should be the headline, actually. Yep.
Exactly right, because some of the headlines here from Dropsite News, I'll just read the taglines, yeah?
Yeah.
Israel attacks continue across Gaza. Israeli forces continued ceasefire violations across Gaza, killing two Palestinians and wounding dozen. Gaza grandfather says the war is not over. This person, whose daughter, son-in-law, and grandchildren were burnt alive, rejects claim of ceasefire. Hamas arrives in Cairo ahead of new ceasefire talks. The Gaza flotilla volunteers, held 11 days in Libyan black site, enter dry hunger and water strike. 10 volunteers with the Global Samud flotilla detained in Benghazi, Libya, for 11 days while attempting to reach Gaza are in deteriorating conditions after entering a dry hunger and water strike. Ireland bans Ben-Gvir and Smotrich from entering the country. These are the sort of
These are real moves that need to happen. Headlines.
Because Palestinian groups say that May was the deadliest month of 2026 in Gaza. The Palestinian Center for Human Rights announced that 119 people were killed, including 19 children and 10 women. Women and children and the elderly accounted for roughly 30% of Israel's victims in May. This is after, as well, that the PR stunt that was taking the Beaufort Castle in Lebanon. So this has a I was watching some reporting on it. This has a historical link because the PLO pushed back the IDF in the 80s using this castle.
Oh, right. So the IDF have a god long memory.
Yeah, and they the thing is to see how influential the political Zionist movement is that once that happened, it was reported broadly across all outlets.
So really what we're saying is that there is a deeply sinister connection between the power elites and the Zionist ideology.
Absolutely. And also, these can't be decoupled from capitalism and the drive to war and why the drive to war exists.
Well, yeah, because they're a symptom, aren't they? I mean, really, it is. And as they say, it's not climate change, it's system change that is required here.
Well, that's exactly you saying, I like the anecdote we were speaking about in the tea room where you were talking to a lady about the weather, and it just struck me that even a conversation about the weather is to be seen as political.
Well, that's what I said to her. I said, oh, look, there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with the weather. The big people, the rich people aren't on our side. And she goes, yeah, they're not. And then she scurried to the other end of the tram so that she didn't have to have a continued conversation with me. Because the idea that ordinary people are unaware of what's going on and that the power elites are not actually the bogeyman. I mean, this is one of the reasons for why there's more horror films being made, I'll have to say. People are extremely unsettled. And it doesn't matter if the Penny Wongs of the world are wearing their suits and their calm language and are hoping that they'll win the next election, or any of those politicians, even the monstrous One Nations and their tiny little worlds of winning a election. Actually, it's an existential threat we're involved in, and we all need to knuckle down and keep the line and fight the good fight.
Yeah.
You're on Solidarity Breakfast. We've had a long rave, probably not headlines. We had other headlines. It's funny, you know, because SBS, they had a program on called Hunting for the Last Nazi, and I thought, what? There's lots of Nazis out there everywhere. What does this program actually cover?
Well, exactly right, and especially when there's real concrete issues that are happening, like the absolute violence that's being visited on working people. I just read a horrifying story in Italy where the system of caporalato, which is like you deputize other migrant workers to visit violence and control recently arrived migrant workers. So you take their documents, you force them to work in farms in squalid conditions.
And pay them substandard rates and then charge them exorbitant rates for transport and food.
Exactly
and
right.
Substandard housing.
And four of these people refused to pay the transport fee. That's what's being reported, allegedly. And they were burnt alive in the car that they were getting transported in, with the local police saying that they're treating it as murder and not accidental in any way. And it highlights when the agricultural minister can't, it says, you know, wow, Italy's a place that, you know, the work and is respected and we don't, the dignity of the of people
democracy.
And stuff, and it's democracy and stuff. But that's in stark contrast with the reality that these workers were burnt alive to send a message to everyone else that you must be in line.
Goodness me. That just takes your breath away. You're on Solidarity Breakfast on this cool winter morning with Tobias and Annie.
Community Radio on 8:55 AM.
Yeah, and it's Solidarity Breakfast with Annie and Tobias, and we're going to go on to Voices for Palestine. It's David Shoebridge speaking at the NACBA rally in Melbourne on the 17th of May. It is a reminder too that there is a rally on Sunday for Palestine. It's on at 12 at State Library. Let's hear what the man's got to say.
Give it up to Senator David Shoebridge.
First of all, thanks everyone for coming out today, and I too want to start, as Senator Thorpe and others have done, by acknowledging this is First Nations land. When you go and you advocate with the Palestinian community and their friends, and you understand that connection to country and land and culture, we need to acknowledge the ongoing genocide against First Nations peoples on this land. And I just got back from the NT as part of a Senate inquiry into the appalling youth justice disaster across this country. First Nations kids being whisked from home and country, put in torture-like conditions in jails. And if that's not a military occupation of the Northern Territory and parts of this country to steal resources and steal culture, I don't know what is. So let's commit to acknowledge this is First Nations land, to end the crisis of youth justice where kids are being taken and stolen from family and country, and to demand the Australian government say you can't torture First Nations kids and to close First Nations kids' jails. Close them across this country, wherever they are. But this is now 8 decades of NACBA. 8 decades of dispossession and violence, and there's no one day where the NACBA started, there's no one day where the NACBA ends, it continues. But what we should acknowledge is that it began in terrorism. It began in violence, in ethnic cleansing, in genocide, in the destruction of villages, the killing of and raping of women, and the violence against the Palestinian people, and the world stood by and let it happen. Yeah. Yeah.
and we hear, you know, stories, alternate stories about how the state of Israel was created. But we will not forget the truth, that it began in violence, began in ethnic cleansing, it began in terrorism, and we see the truth for what it is. And that's part of what we're doing today, to acknowledge the Nakba, the reality of the Nakba. But we continue to see this so-called ceasefire. It's not a ceasefire in Gaza, and it's never been a ceasefire in Gaza, and it's not a ceasefire in the West Bank. There are kids who were going to school in the West Bank who were shot dead by settlers with the military standing beside. Not a decade ago, but a week ago and a month ago. Families who wanted to connect and catch up with relatives on a drive home stopped and gunned to death in their car by the Israeli military. That's not a matter of history. That's a matter that's happening now. And what we see with our government is basic silence. Silence and complicity, as Israel is now creating a fresh Nakba in the south of Lebanon. Shame. Silence, complicity, but ultimately support. And sometimes you ask yourself, well, how is this happening? How is a government that's meant to be representing us, concepts of democracy and human rights and freedom, how is it that we can continue to supply weapons parts to Israel? How is it we buy weapons from Israel that they've tested in Lebanon, or they've tested in Yemen, or they've tested in Gaza? How is it that we don't just buy, you know, small amounts, we're buying billions of dollars of Israeli weapons tested on the Palestinian people? Contract signed under the Labour government. How is this happening? And I think we're getting a lesson in how the world works. For so long, there's been this convenient narrative of the rules-based order, that we sign on to this agenda led by the United States, which is about democracy and freedom and international order. And that has never been true. It's always been about power. It's always been about privilege. It's always been about resources. But it had this patter, this sales pitch that we all listened to and some of us accepted. But who can look at the war on Iran now and pretend it's about democracy or the rule of law or international law? Who can look at the obscenity in Gaza and pretend that it's about any of that? We see the truth now. It's about violence, it's about oppression, it's about power, and it's about corporate interests. And now that the mask has been ripped off, we've got to ask ourselves, what do we do? Will we continue doing this? And we tell the truth about the Nakba. And we continue doing this, and we stand in solidarity with First Nations peoples in their fight for liberty in this country. And we stand in solidarity with Palestinians wherever they are standing and resisting the occupation. Of course we do that. But then we need to ask ourselves, how did this country get in this position? How are we just a lapdog, worse than a lapdog, a complicit player in US violence across the world? Because that's what's happening here. The US sees Israel as an unsinkable aircraft carrier in the Middle East. And do you know what? They are increasingly seeing Australia as an unsinkable aircraft carrier in their war on China in our region too. The same powers, the same forces. So what do? Well, we organize here too. We organize here to do things like to kill the AUKUS agreement. No more US troops. And we convert hundreds of billions of dollars from nuclear submarines and US weapons platforms to health and education and climate action and international solidarity. That's what we do. And we stop pretending that we can change the Labour Party. We start organising to replace the Labour Party. And I don't care if you're green or you're purple or you're pink, let's join together and stop pretending that Albanese or Wong or Richard Miles can be persuaded to do the right thing. We need to replace them. Yes. And if you want proof positive that every time when they make a statement, it's nothing more than a social media meme, there's no substance to it. Just on Friday, on Nakba Day itself, Myself and my Greens colleagues in the ACT joined together with the Palestinian ambassador to organise a Nakba breakfast in Canberra, in the heart of our democracy. And I want to thank the ambassador for coming, and I want to thank the Palestinian community for coming for that breakfast on Friday. But I'll tell you this, we were there acknowledging the Palestinian ambassador, his role and the role of the embassy in representing the people of Palestine. And we know it's complicated. But you know, our government pretended to recognise Palestine. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
When hundreds of thousands of people walked across the Harbour Bridge, tens of thousands gathered here, hundreds of thousands across the country, and we forced Labor to move, or so we thought. And they recognised Palestine, or so they said. Do you know the Labor government, Penny Wong, has still refused to accept the Palestinian ambassador's credentials in this country? They refuse to call him an ambassador. They refuse to even acknowledge the existence of a Palestinian embassy in here. And they continue to say things like, we're not going to move until other like-minded countries have moved. Well, even the United Kingdom has acknowledged their ambassador and their embassy. France, Canada and others. Our government is captured by Washington. Our government and its foreign policy and its defence policy is owned and run not out of Canberra, but out of Washington, and we should acknowledge it for what it is. So now the mask has been ripped off. Join with us. Join with the millions of Australians who want to cancel the AUKUS agreement. Join with the millions of Australians who want a government that stands for peace and democracy and actually commits to supporting Palestinian rights. And let's show that commitment to Palestine by changing our country too. So thanks so much for coming out. Thank you for telling the truth. We will end the Nakba. We will free Palestine and we'll free our country while we're at it. Thanks very much.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast. Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
You are listening to 3CR, celebrating 50 years of radical radio. Stay
anti-fascist!
That's right, stay anti-fascist. Doesn't matter what they try to do to you, you're on 3CR, Solidarity Breakfast with Annie and Tobias. And of course, there was the massive, it was fairly well attended, but it could have been better well attended, the public housing rally last Saturday. We walked from the State Library up through up La Trobe Street and up over towards Carlton and got to actually walk on Victoria Parade, which was quite exciting. You don't normally get to walk on Victoria Parade, I'll have to say, and made our way up to Athington Gardens. It was a good, there were a lot of very good speeches, and so I've gathered up these three that we're going to listen to now.
And also you've collected a showcase of Australian music. That's
yes.
What we've been listening to. So the first song was You and Me by Amy Alex, and the song you just heard now was The Other Side by the Orb Weavers.
Yeah, all lovely, lovely stuff.
The government opposition, all the major political party, apart from the Greens, which have a specific public housing policy, have gotten away confusing people with terminology, equating community, social and affordable housing with public housing. It is totally different. And if there's one thing you need to do when you leave this rally is to explain to as many people as possible the difference. There are reporters who've got no idea what the difference is. And what Grace has highlighted is what it's like. And I could get many other people here to speak about what it's like to live in that situation where you've got no security, while in public housing, unless you're pretty outrageous, you've got security. Next, we've got 44 Flats United, Aku. Plus friend.
Thanks, Jerry. Thanks, everybody. Sorry, I'm just recovering from some respiratory thing that's made its rounds at the flats in Southside. My name is Aku and I'm the proud founder and leader of 44 Flats United, or 44FU. Firstly, I just want to take this opportunity to say that we at 44FU, we're guided by three principles. The first is that nobody who lives in any of these high rises is left worse off because of this decision to demolish the flats. And the reason that is because everybody has a choice of what they want to do. Some people want to go. Some people have had a transfer application in for decades. It's their prerogative and we support that. But by and large, the majority of people who live in these buildings, and we know this because we've door knocked every single door in tranche one and tranche two, that's 1,000 flats. By and large, people want to stay. And when they know what's happening, they feel indignant about the whole situation and they want to stay and fight even more. Secondly, keep everything public housing. And we say keep it public because if there actually is something wrong with the buildings that we live in, there is no way we want our families and our friends to keep living in them. They would need to go down. But we know that's a fallacy. We know that the government's just saying that as a justification to demolish the flats, and it's got nothing to do with the integrity of the buildings. So we say keep it public. And then thirdly, it's land back. So I want to acknowledge that we're fighting for public housing and our right to homes and land, on land that doesn't even belong to us, land that was stolen from the Woiwurrung, Wurundjeri and the Boonwurrung people of the mighty Kulin Nations. And if anybody, I strongly encourage everybody here today to come to court, to the Supreme Court of Appeals on this Wednesday, the 3rd of June, to support Uncle Robbie Thorpe in his fight against the King for the case of genocide. Because until we address genocide in this land, this shit is just going to keep happening to different groups of people. I'm going to give you a brief update on just like four things that got sent to us this week. Like we're there at the flats every day across tranche 1, 2 and 3. So for those who don't know, the state government's attacking public housing or demolishing the 44 high-rises in tranches. And in total, there are now 12 buildings. So in tranche one just this week, and I think Sandra touched on it, they've already started infill work. So what that is people are living in high-rises and they've got a car park in the middle where they all park. They've closed that off now. So there's limited access for emergency vehicles and people are fighting each other for car parking spaces. They can't take their kids to work. They have nowhere to park their car when they get home at night. And this is what residents have said, it feels like an attack on them because we got the special leave application at the High Court last week. And this is them being frustrated because every day that they don't start demolition works, it's costing them money. And so now it feels like retaliation against the residents. They've started infill works. Shame, exactly. Shame. They've also, over at 33 Elford Street, also a building in Tranche 1, a 12-storey unit that mostly houses families. A year ago, they started drilling and knocking down walls, and they've just recommenced that this week without any notice. And young kids are scared because they feel like their building is going to crumble in on them and no one cares, and they're going to die and no one's watching and no one does anything. The other thing is that over in Tranche 2, so over in Richmond and, people who moved over from Tranche 1 about a year ago, who got moved into community housing, which is where they want everybody to move into, they were told, don't worry, your rent settings will stay the same at 25%, same as public housing. And that's a lie, because people have received letters this week, and their rent's gone up to 34%. And that's what people can expect from now on. And I guess I'll end on a positive note. So with Tranche 3 have been wised up. They know what's happened in Tranche 1 and 2. What 44 of you have been doing across the 7 buildings is we've been organising resident petitions. So residents have written their own petitions because they're against what's happening. And in 3 of those estates, the majority of people, so around 60% of people in those 3 buildings, have now signed a petition to stay. And 25% of people in the St Kilda building at Inkerman Street have also put declarations up on their doors telling Homes Victoria to go away. They're not cooperating with this process. So what we need is everybody here to support them and make some noise. Now, it is with great pleasure and honour that I introduce the next speaker. So what we've also done across 3 of the buildings already is each of those buildings have held their own, and for all of them, the first time ever, their first democratically elected residents committee elections, which is fucking huge. And the turnout at these is around 40 to 50%. So they've elected their own residents committees to represent them against the demolition of the flats. So Homes Victoria better be fucking scared now, because people are getting organised. So it's with great pleasure that I introduce Lorraine, who's just been elected to the 150 Victoria Avenue, Lathall Court, Albert Park high rise.
Thank you. My name's Lorraine. I'm a resident at one of the older persons high rise towers. This is my first time ever speaking, so I'm shaking in my boots. I'm nervous. I'm a little bit embarrassed and I'm angry. So forgive me for reading this because I want to get my point clear. I didn't ever expect to be here. 3 months. 3 months was all it took. It was a real estate company's 90-day notice to vacate, followed by a corporate job cut. So now my job is gone and I'm homeless. What do? I'm hopeless being homeless. I thought that was a joke, but it's not a joke. I couldn't compete with 50 other people applying for permits at apartments that had jobs. It was soul destroying. However, today is my 2-year anniversary of moving in, and I am so grateful to Public Housing for supporting my crash land. But the reason I am here is because I've become homeless again with the news that my tower, one of the 7 older person's towers, is to be torn down. In total, that's 600 or 700 older people. Just take that number in for a moment. It could be you. It could be your mum, your dad, your grandma or your grandpa. Who does that? Especially when we're given no proof as to why. What you said before, shame. Shame. So we are offered the instability of the not-for-profit community housing with higher rent and utility costs, which could, like Housing First Oasis, sell off our apartments, making me, your mum or dad, your grandma or grandpa, homeless again. This has to stop, people. We have to stop this together. Tell everyone. Divided we fail, united we can do this. Stop the destruction of the people and communities. Stop the tower demolitions and save public housing. Thank you.
Now, I know some of you aren't interested in electoral politics, but I'd just like to remind you there's an election on the 28th of November. And whether you vote or don't vote, they don't know. So you should be looking at all the potential candidates in that electorate and see which one have a positive attitude and support for publicly owned, publicly managed and publicly constructed housing in this state, and tell them that if they don't give you a clear answer, there is no way you and your extended family of 600 people are going to vote for them. Okay. Now we've got, that was a granddad joke, not a dad joke. Stop the Demo from Jackson Payne. Now Jackson, I'm quite impressed with this crew, because these are the type of people that are not here. It's a coalition of workers from across the social and community services sector. Now, I'm old enough to remember when we'd have rallies about housing 20, 30 years ago, and all the church groups would be there, all the not-for-profit groups would be there. Where are they today? They're not here. They've got their noses in the trough, in the privatisation trough. And that's the difference. It's the residents who are fighting and other people who support those residents. We can't rely on those institutions anymore. Of course, for them, it's a way of making a good buck. Thank you.
Now, look, I've got to take responsibility for the next speaker, Spike. He's obviously from the Homeless Persons Union, a grassroots organisation consisting of members who have been homeless and are currently homeless. The trouble is, he's one of my children. When he was a teenager, he'd hide under the bedspread and listen to the Anarchist World This Week. Look at him now.
Hi. So yes, my name's Spike. I'm from the Homeless Persons Union. There's other Homeless Persons Union members here today. I've had a long-term lived experience of homelessness myself, because even familial relationships break down under the stress of addiction, mental health issues and abuse. So if you know, some of the main drivers of homelessness are definitely economic issues is a big driver, but domestic violence and abuse in the home is also major drivers of homelessness. And that's why there's so many people on our streets, because the amount of violence in our community. So couch surfing, squatting, living in rooming houses, the occasional night sleeping rough, that was part of my experience. But once I got housed through some outreach workers who submitted a public housing application on my behalf while I was in crisis accommodation, I got work as a lived experience as a peer worker at a homelessness health service. So public housing like this, and I'm a proud public housing tenant, saved my life. It helped me rebuild relationships and find my place in the world through meeting people who cared about me and believed in me, not just in public housing, but in the community. Though bricks and mortar are an important aspect of the of this equation, it's also important that the building of and the investment in public housing, what that represents is that the community collectively understands that the capitalist system is brutal and that it exploits working people and is even harder on people on benefits and people that don't work. By investing in and building public housing, the community is expressing through public policy, it's saying that it believes in people and that it understands that housing security is a first step to building a life that is not dependent on paternalistic charities and recognises our human right to housing and security. We believe in public housing because it's property, it's your property for life, where your rent and your housing security isn't defined by fluctuations in the stock market, where you don't have a housing worker in an office on your building watching over you 24 hours a day, that you're able to access your space and that isn't attached to some program tendered out to some charity, where you can smoke, drink and do what you please, as long as you don't hurt someone else, as much as you like. And you might remember Bendigo Street. So the HPU was part of Bendigo Street, where we found that the east-west, the houses that were bought for the east-west link that were left empty for months and months and months, while there was in the same year 350 people were sleeping rough in the CBD. So that's what that's the sort of government that capitalism sort of creates. Creates government that only looks after one sector of the community. But one of the positive things that came out of Bendigo Street was people like Auntie Ange, Uncle Frank, Izzy, Lucy, Monica, and many all got public housing, and they're still in public housing today. The other thing I wanted to say is that the housing crisis or housing has been in crisis ever since I can remember. Ever since I was a kid, for working people, for people struggling with their mortgages to put food on the table, pay for school uniforms, pay for healthcare. The housing crisis has been around forever for working people and for people on benefits, so it's nothing new. It's how capitalism works. So the housing crisis has been our the reality for working people for decades. It punishes, so capitalism punishes, financially exploits and denies access to resources like housing to First Nations people, young people who don't have supportive families, people who use drugs, immigrants, people from the LGBTQIA plus community are 6 times more likely to experience homelessness than anyone else. People with disabilities, people with mental health issues like depression, anxiety, PTSD and many other mental health challenges are also facing difficulties accessing housing without public housing. The other thing I wanted to mention was the idea that there's scarcity. I had a look on Google just before we left for here today, and the people that check our water, like the water board checks houses, and they found that there's up to 32,000 homes that were completely empty for an entire year. The census found that there were 70,000 homes that were significantly underused, pushing the number to 100,000. So the idea that there's scarcity is a fucking capitalist, it's a capitalist fucking, it's a strategy to try and to force people to compete against each other. It keeps rents high and property values high, and We have to do all we can to maintain the fight against the demolition of public housing. Thanks.
Thank you, Spike. Look, there's been a...
That was, we're back. It's Solidarity Breakfast with Annie and Tobias. Yeah.
That was Andy Remind, Italian Australian musician that you might see busking all across the CBD.
Oh, if fantastic.
If you go on during the week in the early morning, we'll have to have him on. He's a lovely bloke.
Yeah, that's great. And of course, we're moving right along to the wonderful Kevin Healy. Just reminding you that it's. Radiothon month, and also it's the 50th year of the wonderful 3CR. And if the legacy media doesn't keep on informing you why 3CR is such an essential part of the Australian media landscape, then I don't know what does.
And that's it's an important point. I've been reflecting a lot on this during this week, just in relation to how important this radio station is to the community, the way that the structure worked and the way that it was set up in order to empower people. So there's just so many aspects of this station that are uplifting for the community. You can get involved, you can learn a skill, you can report on issues that you think are relevant. It really truly is a grassroots organization that you can genuinely be part of and feel empowered to be part of. And it's a essential counter to the alienation you feel under neoliberalism. It puts you into a community. You can listen to the voices that reaffirm human thought and human emotion and connect you to each other. And so if you can spare whatever you can, it is essential that we keep this radio station alive.
And before we move on to This Is The Week That Was by the glorious Kevin Healy, I also wanted to say that it's big honour to all those people who began the battle for 3CR and were part of the development of the framework that makes the governance framework, which makes this station still be as strong as it ever was. Anybody who's had anything to do with organisations will know that this is a pure miracle, which is a human-built miracle. 3CR is a human-built miracle.
Week solidarity, Brekkie team listener, when just when we thought things couldn't get worse, well, let's hear it from our old mate Innes Will Cost, the workers of the True Blue Aussie Industry Profits Group. A caring employers will clearly struggle to absorb these high wage increases at a time when costs are surging and conditions are deteriorating. Doesn't that say it all? Clearly struggle, high increase, costs surging, conditions deteriorating. There simply couldn't have been a worse time for the Fair Work True Blue Aussie No Longer Work Choices Just Looks Like It con mission to award the lowest of low paid a 4.75% wage rise. 4.75%, outrageous. Just when we thought things couldn't get worse for the poor, filthiest rich of the filthy rich, for poor caring employers, bang. Not only forced to splash out their not-so-hard-earned on their tax lawyers, but hit with this devastating wages bill. It further delinks wage outcomes from productivity. The True Blue Aussie Chamber of Commerce and Industry Profits, David Handhouse, the profits exploded. And what sympathy did the poor caring employers get from the evil unions? That's what they say every year, the ACTU displayed its insensitivity. As we've said a number of times, why don't the evil unions and lazy avaricious workers bide their time and wait for the caring employers to tell them when it is the right time to squeeze a wage rise out of them? They'd only be too happy to oblige. The Lord Rupert of Wapping Sin led its coverage telling us the wage rise, high 4.75%, meant mortgage holders will be whacked twice in 2026. Just wish they'd explained that a bit. Care the caring employers have for their lazy avaricious workers was expressed beautifully by big investment corporation Standard Chartered, the wealth supremo Bill Winters, real name, discussing the impact of AI on the workforce. The impact would be felt by lower value human capital, Bill told us. See, not human beings, but human capital. Unlike high-value human beings like Bill Winters, suggesting it must be very cold winters for his workers. Sorry, his lower-value human capital. An examination of areas most affected by the crippling changes to capital gains taxes and negative gearing, Sydney's Darling Point topped the list with 971 people reporting capital gains at an average of $550,000 each. Poor, well, not so poor, Darling Point darlings. Now they have to waste some of that on their tax lawyers. Oh, and just for the record, Darling Point is not a working class suburb. The Minister for Being Offensive and Train-Killing Richard Mall's the bad guys, he of the giant mind, at a war fest, train-killing fest in Singapore, announced the exciting news True Blue Aussie would buy three used submarines from US of the UN of the US of the world used sub salesperson Honest Pete Hug Killer Stuff, telling us what a great deal this was. So we won't go on handing billions to the US of and His Most Gracious Majesty's home country Merchants of Death submarine industries, Richard. No, it does not mean that. After all, we have an obligation to hand billions to those people. It's a great deal for True Blue Aussie. Such a great deal, Colonel Richards said that after handing billions to the US of Merchants of Death for new submarines, used subs were exactly what we were looking for. And what are we paying Honest Peach used subyard colonel for, Richard? I can't disclose that for security and commercially confidential reasons. What, Trubler Aussie security? No, the government security. Honest Pete, the used sub salesperson, said the billions we were handing the US of were part of the US of's defence against evil China. But Pete Trubler Aussie says it remains independent. And we appreciate that. We recognise the independence of all our acolytes. We expect all our acolytes to spend more and more on our defence, our merchants of death, independently. And even more exciting, Richard committed Trubler Aussie to join the US of and His Most Gracious Majesty's home country in exciting underwater drones, guaranteeing the ultra-expensive submarines, new or used, will be blown out of the water at the first sign of US of aggression, with Trubler Aussie, as usual, swinging on its coattails. Now, listener, an easy question. Seeing we're dealing with a dedicated socialist committed to the working class, name just 10 differences which set Richard apart from the caring business class conservatives. Come on, okay, 9 differences. Goodness, all right, 5, try 5. No, well, what about 2? Come on. All right, 1, just 1. Please, there must be something. Okay, keep thinking and get back to me. There must be, because an interviewer asked Colonel Richard how he got on with Honest Pete, given they came from, quote, different sides of politics. See? Proof. Very well. We always get on very well, he assured us, and of course they would, as long as we keep buying from Honest Pete's used subyard. No, more pertinently, it's a meeting of the mind. On train killing, the Iran invasion is about to be settled or about to explode, depending on which minute we hear the decisive ramblings of Honest Pete's Commander-in-Chief Donald Trump or the poor. Although one thing of which we can be certain, if an end looks genuinely in sight, then Donald's puppet master Zion Supremo Benjamin, not another Yahoo, will make sure it soon disappears out of sight. Donald finally appointed an ambassador to Trubler Aussie, vacant for ages, David Bratt, part of the Tea Party movement who has been teaching business relations. Maybe he taught Bill Winters. Anyway, at Liberty University, a Christian university, and of course, once the word freedom bobs up, we know it must just love liberty, freedom and democracy. And David displayed his deep knowledge of Trubler Aussie, saying the automatopoeic Forker subs would be built in Adeline. He is from the south, so maybe he confused Adelaide with Sweet Adeline. But good news, he wants to bolster our joint defences against we know who. Fight against the malign influence of our adversaries. Unlike the benign, no stronger uplifting influence of the US of. Caring business class party supremo and would-be big supremo Angus Tailings told his party's conference the socialist budget was a war on the essence of being Trubler Aussie, which left us very confused. The essence, Angus, what is the essence? The essence of being Trubler Aussie is avoiding capital gains taxes, family trust to ensure you meet your legal tax obligations, not being tied up with productivity-limiting red and especially green tape, lazy, avaricious worker respect for their caring employer, that sort of thing. So these are the Trubler Aussie values immigrants must accept under your non-racist immigration policy. Absolutely. But we've been told the essence of being Trubler Aussie values were honed on a military disaster invading the wrong beach in Turkey. Yes, that's right. So what is it? What are they? What is the essence? It's all the things these Islamic pro non-land, non-people Palestinian terrorists will not accept under my non-racist immigration policy. Well, that's cleared that up. Now, I know we have a certain opinion of the Lord Rupert of Wapping Sin, indeed Lord Rupert's media empire generally, but it is running ads promoting itself with which we have to agree. Up to a point. Readers should expect nothing less than the truth, it screams. And see, we have to agree. Spot on, Lord Rupert. It's just after that we run into a bit of trouble. Although it is rightfully upset this week that the ABC, taxpayer-funded, whenever Lord Rupert resorts to taxpayer-funded, it's always a pejorative. In an online program for women about autism, has hired former True Blue Aussie of the Year, Grace Tame. Shame. Grace Tame, who chanted pro-non-land, non-people Palestinian slogans. The ABC must be deaf to public opinion, the Zionist lobby screamed. And Lord Rupert's usual suspect columnist, Andrew Bolt Through the Head, said this outrage proved again the ABC must be privatised, excised from the taxpayer-funded bit, presumably in balanced objective ownership like, say, Lord Rupert, with balanced objective thinkers like Andrew. Balance and objectivity clearly explain the surge in support for No Notion, reflecting the political maturity of the electorate. But one interesting statistic from that poll this week, party best able to handle key issues, and on immigration, One Notion recorded a massive 40%, which seriously is a big worry, especially when 20% had no idea they were other. But we might suggest the 40% have no idea. Now, talk about disloyalty. The first woman elected premier, former Western True Blue Aussie Premier Carmen Lawrence, still a member of the Socialist Party, yet attacking its dedicated socialist current state supremo, Roger Cook the Planet. Just because Roger said if the Woodside with Profits offshore browse project is not approved by Federal Pollution Minister Murray Swatch the Environment, purely hypothetical because Murray's odds on to approve it in his dedication to Mother Earth, but if, then Western True Blue Aussie would have to frack the Kimberley, a state already being fracked by Roger's resource industry mates. And Roger sensibly, at a mining conference at the Perth Ritz Hotel, Ritz-Carlton, a typical working-class get-together, warned evil unions not to overreach as they moved to organise in the union-free Pilbara. And what thanks for such common sense? Well, disloyal Carmen said the Socialist Party rank and file had recently voted for a statewide ban on fracking. By threatening to unleash this reckless and dangerous practice, Cook the Planet is promoting the interests of gas corporations over Democratic Party processes, protection of the state's most iconic environments, and the urgent need to address the climate impacts these projects would inevitably fuel. Where's she coming from? Browse would grill under Scott Reef, she raved on. One of the most diverse and untouched coral systems in the world, a critical nesting ground for green sea turtles and a migratory path for endangered pygmy blue whales. Scientists warn gas extraction could cause the seabed to subside, submerging the sand caves the turtles rely on for their survival. Carmen, what about the survival of Woodside with Profits and its shareholders? Well, she went on and on, concluding with, "We just need a government with the courage to tell the gas industry that its free ride is over." Imagine how poor Roger must feel at such disloyalty from within. And in a heartwarming gesture, Woodside With ran a full-page ad for Reconciliation Week, telling us just how much it loves and respects the Taranilius non-land non-people whose lands it digs up and sacred sites and rock carvings it destroys. For which, finally, it runs away with the Sincerity of the Week Award. Good morning.
You're back with Annie and Tobias on Solidarity Breakfast.
And good morning, Kevin.
Great rollicking piece from him. And we'll be talking to him next week live because it's our Radiothon
show. So tune in. And remember, any donation over $2
is tax deductible.
So rather than your taxes going to the war machine and sending bombs to Israel to kill Palestinians, you can support 3CR.
Oh, that's a neat way of putting it. We're going to go to this speech made by Max Chandler Mather on One Nation. And the reason for why in particular we're going to do this is, as Kevin pointed out, 40% of people for some reason or other think that One Nation have an idea in their head about anything except for self-aggrandizing and grifting as much money out of the public purse as they possibly can. But a personal opinion, that's a personal opinion. But this was a thing that Max Chandler Mather was talking about at a place called the Green Institute. It's on YouTube, the whole piece, but it's really worth having a listen to.
So you may have seen that as part of the Green Institute, we're doing this big social and economic survey of the country. And I'll go into that a little bit tomorrow if you're at the workshop. But in general terms, we've been door knocking to test it for the last few months. And last weekend, we were in Inala. For those who know Queensland, Inala is a very working class outer suburb of Brisbane. Think of it as sort of like Western Sydney, very multicultural, very working class. And we were going there and asking people all these detailed questions about financial stress and social isolation and alienation. And the first door I knocked on was this guy in his 30s, a dad of four kids, and he was a renter and really financially stressed. And his main issue, when we got down to it, was that every Christmas, he couldn't buy all the Christmas presents he wanted for his kids. He worked 51 hours a week as a landscaper. He had taken on a second job just so they could afford the rent. And the fuel costs had really pushed him into the red. And we spoke for about 30 minutes. It was a really long, meaningful conversation. And at the end of it, one of the last questions we asked was, well, who did you vote for in the last federal election? And he said, I donkey voted. I hate them all. And I was like, oh, okay, well, who are you thinking about this time? And he was like, look, I don't like Pauline Hanson. I think she's a racist. And I live in this really multicultural suburb, and she's wrong. Multiculturalism is really good, and I really strongly believe in it. But I'm thinking about One Nation. And I was like, well, why? And he was like, I just think we need to blow it up. We asked him what needs to happen to the economic system. We just need to blow the whole thing up. We need to start again. And you might cringe at that, or you might feel frustrating, but I think if we are going to get to that next stage, there are two critical questions we need to answer. How is it that working people across the country are reaching that conclusion? And what does it say about the potential for a genuinely transformational politics? Because at the end of that conversation, when we talked longer, he was very open to voting for the Greens. Excited by the idea of taxing big corporations, loved the idea of building more public housing, thought rent caps were a fantastic idea. But how is it that a working person like that, who is not a member of his trade union, has decided that despite all of that, he's still thinking about just something that represents an outsider? Back in the 1980s, someone like this guy would have been a member of his trade union. 50% of workers were members of their trade unions back then, which meant that the Labor Party, which, you know, was not doing good things back even then, at the very least had a genuine social connection, organic organisational connection, to 50% of the working class, which is remarkable. That membership rate now is 12%, which meant that some would have had a genuine social experience of collective power and collective strength, would have understood that there was a political movement in the country that at least had the capacity to improve his own material standing, not on the basis of a sort of nihilistic anti-politics, but on the basis of a genuine collective movement. And that hollowing out over the last few decades has left a very febrile and unstable political democracy in Australia, because now the vast majority of people are completely disconnected from either major party. Most people just don't care and aren't connected. And if that's one change, if that's the giant fuel or tinder out there, then the spark or the petrol or the huge flamethrower is the enormous increase in financial and housing stress that's happened over the last 10 years. And what that means is, in the past, when you've seen those big surges in economic crisis or malaise, say in the 1970s, as you started to see inflation increase then, what happened then was a massive upsurge in labour militancy. The working class's response, or working people's response, was collective action. If you look in Australia or in continental Europe or even in the UK, Day's loss to industrial action in the 1970s as a response to the stagflation crisis then, we're currently going through almost the exact same thing right now, was an enormous burgeoning collective movement of working people. I think on one quarter in Australia at one point, they lost 800,000 days to collective days to industrial action. I think over the course of about a 10-year period, there were 7 or 8 million Australian workers involved in some form of industrial action. You go and look at that data now, and it's like a couple of thousand, even when you see them in the media. And so rather than funnel into large collective movements, that anti-political sentiment, that feeling disempowered, never having the social and material experience of wielding collective strength, manifests as a form of almost anti-political nihilism. And that is not their fault. I want you to think about one of the mistakes that I think the left has made for a long time is to lecture and browbeat people who don't vote for us, as if they are somehow voting against their material interests. But I think you need to think about material interests on two axes. One is, obviously, which party is going to give me the best stuff for my life? And it's perfectly reasonable, by the way, if you're struggling to pay the rent, to vote in your material interests. That, in fact, is the rational thing to do. But the other axis is time. How long is it going to take to you to build a million homes? You and whose army is going to take on big corporations? Like, these are genuine things that people will decide. How much power does your movement have? I've never experienced winning like that before, so what makes you think that you can do it? And that's what we're confronting right now. Some of us call it hope. And it is, by the way, part of the reason that I think Labor's biggest asset is low expectations and why Albanese or Chris Minns will go out of their way to tell you things can't happen, because it is quite critical to them, to their success, which is lowering expectations so far that their people can be happy about maybe getting an extra $10 in their pay packet, despite the fact that their rent has gone up by $50 a week. And if that's all the negatives, the positives, we are getting examples across the world right now of how parties and political movements can respond to that. And I would say right now that people in politics wildly underestimate how much people do not like politics and how much financial stress people are in. And so there is the rhetorical thing we need to start doing around speaking to a universalist transformational platform that stops conceiving of change as something that happens in negotiation with the Labour Party and instead conceives of it as completely replacing the way our political and economic establishment works. But the bigger thing, and why you're all in this room, is how do you get people to pay attention? In particular, how do you get the people who aren't paying attention and have no reason to pay attention to politics to pay attention and sit up and take notice? And part of it is that rhetoric and a transformational platform and a willingness to stand up to both the Labor and Liberal Party and say, as Zach Polanski has said, we're not here to be disappointed in you, we're here to replace you. But on the other hand, it's also about organisation and building a mass party. Because I know from my experience that actually the best way to break through that political nihilism, the best way to break through that malaise is face-to-face. Whether it's in your workplaces, whether it's at the door, whether it's at community groups, it's delivering that message of transformational change face-to-face. Actually going to their doors and talking and bringing them with you on that form of transformational change. And maybe I'll finish you with this thought, which is if the political system is hollowed out right now, and if there are no longer these organic connections into large civil society institutions, that does mean that we are at a weak point, but so are the other side. Labor Party's victory in 2025 is a mile wide and an inch thick. It lacks the sort of institutional weight that conservative and social democratic parties had in the 20th century, which means that if we can build the sort of movement that we need to make change, it's going to be a lot easier for us in some ways than confronting establishment parties in the 20th century that were able to corral and push working people into conservative platforms based on their organisational connection to those communities. That no longer exists. Which means that when you door knock in seats right now, you'll find that most people do not care about politics. You'll find that most people are fed up with it, and you'll find that most people are ready to listen to the idea that they can vote for something different and something better. And that we should take hope from. It is, does mean that occasionally we're going to face some setbacks, but it also means that we're presented with enormous potential and opportunity, that the UK Greens can go from 7% to polling to 23, 24% in the space of a year is testament to that fact. And there's absolutely no reason why that couldn't happen in Australia as well.
People are where they are. You're going to have to meet them where they are. And you're going to have to be generous. And that's why it comes back to the idea of friendship. Friendship is never with people who are just like you. What a boring world it would be if you only made friends with people identical to yourself. You know, then again, you might as well have imaginary friends. You want to learn from people. You want to laugh with them. You want to laugh at their limitations. They laugh at your limitations. You grow together. Yeah? So politics is also like that. If you're just stagnant, you know, if somebody enters politics age 15 and when they are 35, the same person, terrible. They haven't grown. They haven't shaped themselves. I'm Vijay Prashad with 3CR. You better listen to it because it's really good.
And we've come to the end of the program. Solidarity Breakfast for another week. Next week is our Radiothon week. Don't forget to listen in. We're going to have a whole lot of friends of the program ringing in and having a chat with us, which hopefully you're going to have a good time because you're a friend to the show as well. I want to remind you that there is a rally for Palestine tomorrow at 12 outside the State Library. But also on Sunday, there is the sixth seminar hosted by Anti-Zionism Australia. It's going to be on at 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Kathleen Syme Library. And Aboriginal activist, researcher and academic Kim Bullimore will tell us what is socialist, ACAR, Labor, Zionism and what role it played in the colonisation of Palestine during the British Mandate period. Very interesting stuff. I've been to several of their things. They are really interesting.
And also next week on Saturday at 2 p.m, Philip's organising the movie Philip Film Club's back, and we'll be involving a lot more people to speak about the movies. The first movie back is 100 Steps, I Cento Passi, which talks about the mafia murders of Peppino Impastato, and is important because this period is when Giovanni Falcone and some of the prosecutors against the mafia were all killed in car bombings. So come around to that. It's 2 p.m. At Democritus House. 583 High Street, Northcote, next week.
Yep. Okay. And coming up next is Asia Pacific Currents. Have we got anything else to say?
Stay any fascist, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Sempre nuove, resta fermo nella mente, così posso ritrovarti con le dita dei pensieri. Come tracce di altri sogni, faccio fuori la paura. Proprio io nella notte.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.